Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
So we spoke a little bit earlier to Craig Pantanowitz, who is the chairperson of the South African Zionist Federation, talking about the United States intervening in this case. But there's definitely a lot more to it. South Africans, of course, very frustrated at the affiliation of the ANC. And this happened immediately following October the 7th, when the ANC came out in their Palestinian colors. There was the phone call by Naledi Pandor to Hamas, first denied, and then when she had no choice about it, said no, it was to offer something, moral support or something. Strange for the ANC to be using the word moral in a sentence, but there you have it. Strange things do occur. Either way, and since then, of course, the South African government in the form of the ANC never really reaching out to the Jewish community. In fact, turning its back on the very community that had supported many aspects of the ANC throughout all of the years. That wasn't enough. The ANC, of course, then took Israel, launched the court hearing, the ICJ case against Israel, and has drawn itself closer to Iran. All of this is a very, very strange. What is going on with the ANC? Are they just hanging out with a bad crowd? What has happened to the ANC? Has it in fact miscalculated its global alliances? And if so, is there a way back? To help unpack that, we are joined by Jonathan Conricus. He is now a senior fellow at the Foundation for Defense of Democracies. Jonathan Conricus, of course, is a very, very well-known face and voice to many of us. I never needed to look up any of his YouTube clips, because somebody would always forward them to me, just in case I had missed it. Jonathan Conricus, a very, very good morning. Welcome to Chai FM. It is
good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Well, it's great to chat to you. As I say, South Africans and South African supporters of Israel, I'm not going to say just Jewish South Africans, know you well, or we feel we know you, because you were very, very much a voice of reason and calm throughout the Gaza war. So I do want to start by thanking you for that.
Thank you.
Your information was absolutely vital, and has been vital to us. Let's talk about South Africa, specifically the ANC, aligning itself with the wrong side geopolitically. From your perspective, what does it look like? What does it mean?
Yeah, so good morning and thanks for having me on. I'd say that it's quite a tragedy. You know, it's a geopolitical strategic tragedy where in Israel we've seen a country, a sovereign nation, a democracy with a democratically elected government take sides with a tyrant, with terror organizations, and really pick the completely wrong side of an equation and put all of its credibility and really bet its future on a losing horse. That, in short, is what the ANC has done, and even worse for the ANC and for the people who live under ANC rule in South Africa is that they not only made the initial mistake of hitching their wagon to the Islamic regime of Iran and its different terror proxies, but they're actually sticking to it. And even though they have had various off-ramps and various opportunities to, you know, recalculate where they're going, where they're taking relations between South Africa and the West, South Africa and Israel, they've had a lot of opportunities to change and to say, okay, we made a mistake, let's amend and let's backtrack here and find our way back to the solid area of standing with democracies. That isn't what the ANC has done. And they've stuck to their choice of siding with terrorists, jihadi organizations in countries like Iran, like Hamas, and that is very unfortunate.
So the question is why. It hasn't given them, and we saw that in the last election, it didn't give them a leg up in terms of local support. And in fact, in areas where there is a greater support for Hamas and the Palestinians, in fact, the ANC did worse than they had done prior. So we haven't seen that benefit. They haven't seen the benefit domestically. They're certainly not seeing it from a international credibility perspective, which means foreign trade and becoming closer to other Western countries economically. Why do you think they would be attracted to players who clearly, A, don't do any good in the world? There's no hiding who the Islamic regime of Iran is, but it doesn't seem to benefit the country or even the party. To me, it looks unfathomable.
Yeah, I would say that it's a pretty classic example in geopolitics of, you know, cutting off your nose to spite the face. And what do I mean by this? I mean that perhaps there was a lot of foolishness and naivete by ANC political advisors and leaders. I think they, like the Iranians, and perhaps like a lot of other people around the world, they read international media. They saw the populist bias against Israel, and they saw the media onslaught against Israel, which of course is not reflective of reality. It's an alternate reality that continues to be curated by a lot of Western media, in that alternate reality, Israel is the bad guy and Hamas are the good guys. And I think people at ANC, they were actually foolish enough and naive enough to believe in it and say, well, if this is the case, then surely we should be supporting the people who claim to be, and people who the New York Times and BBC and CNN are the good guys, the Palestinians, and let's side with them. I think that's one reason, and that's, you know, really comes down to complete ignorance, naivete, and falling for the mass propaganda. Now, I can understand in a sense why they did it, because these media organizations, international media, they are quite powerful. They are relentless. It is a steady drip of toxic against Israel. And it can be quite convincing. So that's one reason. Second reason is, I think, you know, strategically speaking, South Africa is aligned and part of the so-called Global South, the BRICS alliance. And I think that this alliance many times has a spiteful position versus the US. And South Africa under ANC just took this one step further. It was willing to gamble the future of South Africa, its economic ties, its international standing, its credibility, and it maybe wanted to be somewhat of an avant-garde, you know, like you do in rugby, you take the ball and you start running and you hope that others will follow, so you'll have someone to pass to. Well, ANC started running, but none of the others really wanted to follow in the offensive here, and the ANC now is stuck with no one to pass the ball with, and they're going to get tackled. That's virtually what happened you know, this over-enthusiasm of being the most vocal and the most extreme critic of Israel and bedfellow with Iran.
So, of course, South Africa's relationship with the United States is under tremendous pressure. The relationship with Israel is very, very, very much at its lowest point. Is there room, if South Africa wanted to take an off-ramp or reroute, as you mentioned earlier, is that something that they could do? And if so, how?
Not entirely sure that under the ANC that's possible. I mean, change is always possible.
Yeah, sure.
I think that the U.S. Under President Trump, you know, fair warnings were given. The administration issued warnings to the ANC saying, listen, you are on the wrong path. You need to correct. Otherwise, there will be consequences. And I actually think that it can get much worse before it gets better. Because what the U.S. has done, it hasn't really, you know, applied strong diplomatic measures and sanctions. And there's a lot more that the U.S. can and maybe will do if there isn't change. So I would definitely welcome and I would hope that the ANC would make a calculation, you know, for the better future of South Africa, never mind Israel, but really for the economic future and well-being of Australia, to really reconsider
is it
wise to choose the bedfellows of autocratic regimes and terror organizations. That's one. But let's say that the ANC does course correct and understands that it's done a complete mistake here. Yes, what would be needed, I think, would be a very clear and public cut with the Iranian regime and a complete, you know, mea culpa moment from an official on-record event where the ANC officially acknowledges that we were wrong, we shouldn't have sided with jihadi and terror organizations and a theocracy. We made a mistake, explain the mistake, and we are now willing to make amends with Israel, with the Jewish people, with democracies around the world. If that is done, you know, in a very brave, forthcoming way, followed up with action, as in immediately revoking or canceling their completely ridiculous legal lawfare against Israel at the ICC, and really stating the case that we were, you know, we were wrong. This was a mistake. There's no legal foundation to do this, and it was a complete fool's errand. Then maybe yes. But you know, in politics, global politics, many people, many leaders, they lack the ability to actually understand mistakes, and most importantly, to own up to them and take responsibility for them. The politicians who are able to do that are few and far between, in Israel included.
Right,
and therefore, I'm not very hopeful that it will happen, which means that the situation, I think, will continue to
Well, that was going to be my next question. What happens then? What happens in the unlikely event of the ANC particularly seeing the error of their ways, that is, as you've said, and I tend to agree, unlikely? What are the strategic consequences of the place?
I think it is the continued downward trajectory of South Africa as a free country, as an economy, as a vibrant member of the international community, as a trade partner, as a place to invest in. And sadly, I would, you know, this would be a big additional dot in an otherwise very clear line of a downward trend. Sadly, under the ANC, I think, I mean, you know much better, but what I see as an external observer of South Africa in the last 15, 20 years under the ANC is corruption, it is mismanagement, it is poor investment in infrastructure and education. What this does is now, you know, a very significant blow to South Africa's international standing and its ability to, I think, interest investment and, you know, for business environment. And it'll be another negative contributor to the general trajectory of your beautiful and prosperous and tremendously resource-rich country. And I think that's a shame. I think South Africans deserve better, and I think it could be much better, but it is. I mean, there are consequences to actions, and I'm not saying that it's too late, but with this ANC government, I struggled to see a reality where they course correct and bring South Africa back on a good economic track. And, you know, as long as the Trump administration is in power, South Africa is going to continue to suffer the consequences of its of the actions of the ANC. And I don't think it's going to get better.
Is it, what I find strange, and I wonder if you could help me figure this out, is it doesn't need to be absolutely binary in the sense that the recognition that the Palestinians have a right to self-determination and the recognition that Israel and Israelis and Jews around the world deserve to live in peace are actually not mutually exclusive. How do you think we've arrived at a state, and it's not just South Africa, in fact, it's very, very much a problem around the world, where we can't hold both of these truths and values together?
Yes, I agree that the ANC are not alone in this very binary, childish, black and white kind of assessment of the situation. What I think is lacking the most is maturity and honesty. When people look at and assess the conflict in the Middle East, even governments and policymakers and people who ought to know better, they let emotions get the best of their strategic assessment, and they make important strategic decisions based on sob stories in the media and emotional social media content. And that's not how you make policy. And I think there's a massive media, basically an information campaign, information war being waged against the Jewish state, against Zionism, against our right for self-definition and to live safely in our ancestral homeland. And it is being undermined systemically, most of it using emotional, unfounded claims, and without looking at the chronology of the conflict here and honestly saying, well, the Israelis have actually offered the Palestinians peace four different times. Israeli governments, different prime ministers have offered, with, of course, international mediation, have offered Palestinians peace four times. They have offered to end the conflict by trading land for peace and recognizing the Palestinians, but just wanting the Palestinians to say, okay, we end the conflict, we're done, we don't have any further claims. And all four times have been met with Palestinian refusals, twice by Yasser Arafat and twice by Mahmoud Abbas, the current leader of the Palestinian Authority. And I think that, you know, this tremendous dishonesty, intellectual and political dishonesty around the world, where people continue to side with the so-called Palestinians, completely ignoring their actions, completely ignoring their stubborn refusal to recognize Israel's right to exist and to make peace with Israel. And I think that's, you know, to the detriment of everybody. And I really regret that. And yeah, you know, my worldview is that we need to find some type of political compromise that will allow Arabs and Jews to coexist and live respectfully alongside each other. But it cannot be at the expense of Israeli security or the security of Israelis. That cannot happen. And as long as people think that the way forward is for so-called Palestinians' rights to dominate the landscape and dominate the future agenda, and jeopardize the future of Israel, that's not going to happen. And well, we're going to have to continue to fight.
It's interesting because I believe that a lot of this, and we see this playing out as well, is the inability of the West and media, United Nations, etc., to grant any agency to organizations like Hamas, like Iran. In other words, there's always a reason external to themselves why they act. So when we say, for example, that Iran is firing missiles at civilians using weaponry that is considered a war crime, the defense of that is, well, Israel started and attacked them. There's always a reason why the perpetrators of terror are actually deprived of agency. And whilst we don't hold them, while we live in a world that doesn't hold them liable and doesn't hold them to account just as much as Israel, for example, is held to account, I'm not sure that there can be any real progress. And that is what I think, and I'm just interested in your thoughts, might be one of the fundamental challenges that we have.
I completely agree, and I'll give you one additional example. You know, I'm sure you have it in South Africa as well. When someone is dependent on aid, when someone knows that they don't have to work in order to shape their future, then that person becomes complacent, and it deprives him or her of a sense of agency and a sense of control and responsibility of their own future. That's at the personal level. At the national level, it's also true. And if you look at Palestinians, so-called, they have this UN agency called UNRWA, which was founded in 1948, was supposed to be a one-year, two-year organization. It's still around. 78 years after the fact, it's a unique organization in the world whereby the UN has instituted a body that is designed to care for the so-called needs of one ethnic group in the world only. It doesn't exist anywhere else. It's the only ethnic group that has such a thing, and it's an abomination. It's an abomination, and I'll tell you, if I were a Palestinian and I wanted, you know, independence and my own country, my first order of business would be to abolish UNRWA and to do it as quickly as possible, because that organization, instead of helping Palestinians, instead of helping them transition from a refugee mentality, and as you said very correctly, without responsibility, without agency, what that organization does, it keeps them in a continuous state of dependency, and it robs them of actually owning their future and being responsible for their future. So it's an example of exactly how cynical the situation is, and how much,
and
you know,
how
when you really ask yourself, yes, how self-defeating. But then if you ask the tough questions, and if our viewers would have to ask the tough question of, well, what purpose do they serve, the Palestinians, and the millions of people around the world who claim to be caring for the rights of self-definition and dignity of Palestinians? Is it really about that, or is there a more sinister motive behind it? Because if it really was about helping Palestinians, there are far better ways to do it. UNRWA is the worst possible tool because it keeps them dependent.
We do need to unfortunately leave it there, because I have to end my show at 9 o'clock. But what an amazing conversation, Jonathan Conricus. Thank you for your time, for chatting to us, and for bringing us the perspective that you did.